WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk, and WSMNRadio.com.
Well, good morning, Nashua. This is Karen Testerman with We Hold These Truths on WSMN 1590, Nashua's source for news and talk. And it's one of those dreary kind of days outside, but you know what? This is the kind of day that I remember coming into New England in one of my very, very first Octobers, looking around and looking at these gorgeous trees that look like the as my son said, the giant had his paint bucket out and he was just throwing paint everywhere. And it's absolutely gorgeous. And when you have a rainy day like today, it makes all of the bark and the trunks of the trees look absolutely black. It's gorgeous when it happens that way. So we are very, very fortunate to live in this part of the United States. There's nothing like it. I can't talk this morning. It's just one of those very, very fortunate times that we have to be here. When it's some days it's rainy and then we get the sunshine and it sparkles through those trees and you see those reds and the yellows and then eventually it changes. But it's a spectacular. Nowhere else in the United States can you see this kind of beauty going on. And so we are very, very fortunate to be here in this area. So what's on the docket for today? Have you listened to the news? Have you listened to I don't know about you, but I'm almost to the point where I've turned off the national news because of all of the bickering that's going on and the finger pointing. And I keep, every time I listen and I hear, we have, the president saying that the Republicans won't work with them. And we have Harry Reid saying the Republicans won't work with them. And then you hear somebody else saying the Republicans won't work with them. And, you know, when they keep pointing that finger, I keep thinking, you know what? There's three more of them pointing back at you. And you're the ones that are sitting there stomping your feet and saying no to every proposal that the House is sending over. The House has sent over bill after bill after bill to fund different parts of the budget that they've sent over, but the Senate has never really approved. The Senate hasn't lived up to its end of the bargain for a long, long time, but they keep sending over parcel bills for these continuing resolutions, and the continuing resolutions only cover a short period of time. They can cover anywhere from 5 days to 3 months, or sometimes a little bit longer, but usually it's 3 month increments that they do. And it's just the reason that we're having this shutdown is because the Senate will not cooperate and even consider any of these bills. And then we have, in addition to the World War II monument that we talked about last week, which is an open-air monument, there is no National Park Service that has to be there to open up the doors or to sign people in, whatever. It is an open-air monument. And they were going to put tape around and prevent anyone from going in there. And by the way, this monument was also paid for by the majority of it was paid for by private donations. And yet we've got 15, I think it was like $15,000 was actually submitted by the federal government. And yet they're going to control who goes in to see and who doesn't go in to see. And the other one that just absolutely blew me away over the weekend, well, they tried to close down Mount Vernon, which is a tourist attraction. The latest one? How about the oceans down in Florida? We want to close the park that's down there, but we also want to close off all the access to the beaches. It's absolutely ludicrous. I don't think it's if it weren't so sad that it's our the leader of the free world that is going down and acting this way, it would almost be a joke. But it's very, very sad that we have this person who is managing to in any way carry on in this way. It's amazing to me. So that's what's going on in the national scene, and it's one of those things that I kind of look around and say, do I really, really, really want to participate in this? Do I even want to listen to it? There's so many things that are uplifting in the world that are going on. There's positive actions that are going on. I mean, the funniest one was my grandson last night. We took him out to dinner, and he plays this game with my husband, where my husband puts his hands flat underneath, and then you slap the top of the other one's hand, and the other one tries to pull him back and miss. But David always starts off on top so that the grandson can slap him first, but he always misses. And last night it was really funny because his hands were getting so red from being slapped. And so his sister took over, and his sister was even beating him at it. And, the poor kid looked like he'd been really mistreated, but it was his own fault. It was kind of funny. Those are some uplifting things that are going on. We have this month and September are also months that we have a lot of our fundraising dinners and so forth that are raising the funds to keep our crisis pregnancy centers open, or as they're known now as care nets. And so those have been very well attended. And you see those sorts of things going on where people are gathering and talking and doing good with what they have. There's an upcoming dinner, I'm sure, at some point that will be for things like Johnny and Friends. We had their executive director in to talk to us. Over the weekend, there was a campaign management school that went on up in Concord with the Coalition of New Hampshire Taxpayers. So there are lots of good things that go on, and we don't have to keep focusing on the silly antics down in Washington. Yes, it does affect some people, but they are talking about back pay and helping people out as they go along. So it's not a complete write-off. The military is getting paid. The retirement people, Social Security is getting paid. And we had Betsy McCoy in state again. I hope to get her back on the radio with us again. Betsy McCoy, as you recall, is the former lieutenant governor of New York. And Betsy has read every page of the, and I forgot, it was 2,567 pages, something like that, of Obamacare. And that's just the bill, the shell of the bill. And she was explaining how when you go in to read it, it takes approximately 3 months to read this bill. Absolutely crazy. And so, Betsy was saying that there are a few things that we can do to shelter ourselves against some of the fallout that's going to come. But it's been being implemented slowly. And some of the online information that is being collected by your doctor will now be online for anybody to look at. So they'll know whether, and why does your dentist need to know whether you're on some medication for Viagra or whatever or if why do they need to know if you've been in for birth control? What in the world is it their business for that? I mean, they're not dealing with that kind of thing. Or your eye doctor. It's absolutely amazing the procedures that are now going on. And I hope to get the doctor from up north that I spoke with a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to ask him if he won't come on and tell his story, because here's a man who was employing 6 people who lost their jobs at the beginning of this month because of the onerous requirements of online reporting and the control over what the doctors can do, what they can say, how they can treat you, how many they can see. There's a complete control freak activity going on that is absolutely inexcusable. We are going to take a short break, and we will be back after a few minutes on WSMN 1590. This is Karen Testerman. We are with We Hold These Truths. I forgot the name of the organization, and is First Principles, but the program is We Hold These Truths, where we try to bring you some solutions to what's going on in the world. And we will be back after a short break. And here you are back on WSMN 1590. This is Karen Testerman with We Hold These Truths. And we are sponsored by First Principles. This is kind of crazy today. I'm running around interestingly, figuring out what's going on. Our next guest is James Taylor, who is a writer, policy analyst, if I can get my tongue going right, radio host and public speaker. He has been working with the Heartland the Heartland Institute, and he has been debating some of his former colleagues about global warming and what these latest reports were from that said that global warming was still alive and that man has all this ability to impact it. So I wanted to hear from James Taylor because he was very interesting in his rebuttal to some of this and whether or not a carbon tax is really something that conservatives should look at. James, welcome to We Hold These Truths.
Well, thank you for having me on, Karen.
Well, glad to do that. You had a very interesting debate just recently about the carbon tax.
Well, there are some folks who claim that it's a conservative issue, that limited government free market conservatives should be supporting a carbon tax. And their argument is that, according to free market principles, that various energy sources, if there are externalities, that should be accounted for in the market. However, there are various flaws, actually very many flaws with that assertion. For example, they're assuming that carbon dioxide emissions are going to have a substantial negative impact on human health and welfare, when the evidence shows just the opposite. At the same time, they don't seek to impose similar environmental externality costs on wind power, solar power, etc. And wind power, even while producing just 3% of the nation's electricity, kills 1.4 million birds and bats each and every year in the U.S., and it requires 300 to 600 square miles of land development to replace a single conventional power plant. And on top of that, you already have various top-down command and control restrictions from EPA that already put a punitive price on carbon dioxide emissions, whereas any carbon tax would be on top of that. So these are some of the points that I mentioned in a debate recently in Washington, D.C., and I was happy to see, that was back in June, that since that time, the media-generated apparent momentum for a conservative support of a carbon tax has slipped away.
Well, that's good, because here's something that's always bothered me from my basic science class. It seems to me that we humans exhale the carbon dioxide and that the plants absorb the carbon dioxide and make oxygen that we breathe in. And I can't figure out why we're so concentrated on the carbon emissions as being something that humans are contributing to the overall global warming, quote, global warming, of our atmosphere.
Yeah, well, and also even when we accept the premise that human emissions of carbon dioxide from coal, natural gas, etc., are causing temperatures to rise, we know as a matter of physics that if we fully double the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, we'd only get 1.1 degrees Celsius of warming, which nobody on any side of the debate thinks is a serious problem. And that 1.1 degrees Celsius, I mean, that's a universally recognized figure, skeptics, alarmists alike. And for context, from the dawn of the Industrial Revolution all the way to today, atmospheric carbon dioxide emissions or levels have risen only 40%. We're not even halfway to that 1.1 degrees Celsius. So yes, we're getting some warming, but it's coming at a very slow pace. And for the vast majority of the past several thousand years, temperatures were 2 to 3 degrees Celsius warmer than they are today. So the key question isn't, are we causing some warming, or is the planet warming? It's, is the warming that is occurring and that we can expect to occur sufficient enough to create a global warming crisis? And the answer is no. We'd have to keep warming at this pace for several centuries before we even reach the temperatures that predominated 4,000 or 5,000 years ago.
Oh, interesting. And my other question is, what impact do things like the explosion of Mount St. Helens have on the overall global, the overall amount of carbon emissions that are in the air?
Yeah, that's a great question. When you have volcanic activity, that releases sulfur dioxide into the atmosphere, which serves as a cooling agent. So when we have a period of heightened volcanic activity or even a single major volcanic eruption, we will see a decline in temperatures for a good year or two. And during the past couple decades, we really haven't seen much volcanic activity. So the temperatures that we're reporting are actually warmer than would otherwise be the case with normal volcanic activity, and those temperatures are still nothing to be concerned about. In fact, temperatures haven't risen for the past 17 years or so. So if and when we return to periods of more normal volcanic activity, we can see temperatures becoming lower than they are today.
Well, what about this report on the expansion of the ice cap? How does that impact, or how are we impacting that?
Yeah, you hear so much in the media and from the alarmists about the shrinking Arctic ice cap. And I just recently wrote a column documenting all the predictions that the Arctic Ocean would be ice-free by now. And, of course, that hasn't happened, not even close. But, yes, over the past 30-plus years, in 1979, NASA launched satellite instruments that can precisely measure the polar ice caps. So since 1979, we've seen a modest decline of the Arctic ice cap. And yet at the same time, in the Antarctic, in the southern hemisphere, the Antarctic ice cap has grown by a greater extent than the Arctic ice cap has receded. And really, if you want to give the alarmists the benefit of the doubt, it's been roughly an equal trade. And even in the Arctic, where we have seen Arctic ice receding, a study that was just published about Chukchi Sea polar bears, and the Chukchi Sea, which is to the north and western part of Alaska, this is where the Arctic sea ice has receded the most. And yet, scientists have documented that this is the area where polar bear populations are doing best as the sea ice recedes, because polar bears aren't dependent on sea ice. They utilize sea ice to capture seals, but they're omnivores. They can eat all sorts of things. And as the sea ice has receded, they've actually done better than in other regions.
Oh, interesting. Now, so I can remember, too, back where at one point the sands or the level of the ocean was supposed to be rising on one side and taking away the terrain on one side of the earth and building it up someplace else. Is that still going on? Is that something that is a natural occurrence? Is it impacted at all by our temperatures, or what causes some of that?
Well, due to tectonic plate activity, there are some places where you have sea levels that are rising and some places where they're falling. Sea level isn't going to be uniform because of most particularly those factors. But when you look at sea level as a whole, when you average it out globally, we know that going back for more than a century, Sea level's been rising at a fairly steady pace. Throughout the 20th century, sea level rose 7 inches, and it rose very steadily. There weren't many dips, anything to speak of, dips or accelerations. And the same is held true this century. Now, people talk about what a crisis this is going to be, and they have these alarmist maps that show all this, mayhem that's going to occur. But here's the thing. Utilizing 20th century technologies, humans were quite capable of adjusting to and adapting to 7 inches of sea level rise. Now we have 21st century technologies. There's no reason to believe that we are going to be less capable of adapting to sea level rise with more advanced technologies than we were capable of doing so during the last century.
And so now what impact is all of, we've had all of this hype also about the solar activity. What is there any correlation in what occurs on the sun and what occurs here on the Earth?
Absolutely. Scientists at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, for example, have documented going back several hundred years that global temperatures rise and fall in lockstep with variations in solar output. The sun doesn't produce the same amount of energy all the time. It actually varies quite a bit. And the scientists at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics have documented that that very close correlation between solar output and global temperatures remains true even here in the 21st century. If we plot, and those scientists have done so, if you plot global temperatures and then you juxtapose them with carbon dioxide emissions, you don't see very much correlation whatsoever. But if you juxtapose global temperatures with solar output, you see near exact correlation. And this gives us very strong evidence that the sun, rather than human carbon dioxide emissions, is the primary cause of temperature fluctuations here on Earth.
Now, what are some of the projects that you are working on right now?
Well, I am Senior Fellow for Environment Policy at the Heartland Institute, and I focus on global warming there. I speak with scientists, climate scientists, on a daily basis, and I'm publishing on our website, heartland.org. I also write a weekly column for Forbes' website, so you can simply Google search Taylor and Forbes, and you will find my global warming columns. At the same time, I have my own website, jamestaylorpolicy.com, where I post some of this information. Those are just a few. And also, there's a crew from Showtime. They're following me around the country as I testify in state legislatures and give public presentations. They're going to be airing about an 8-part program in the spring, in April, I believe. They call it Years of Living Dangerously. And it's giving the alarmist point of view on global warming, but they are going to have 1-hour-long segment in which they examine why their prescribed solutions have not been implemented. And they've identified me as the person most responsible for keeping our energy policy sane, at least from my point of view. So you can look for that in the spring as well and see what I've been doing there.
Well, congratulations, James. I think that's wonderful. Now, tell me, what is the most effective energy production mechanism that we are using today? Because we keep talking about going for green energy and so forth like that, but there's this talk about punitive measures for the coal industry and trying to get rid of that, and we don't want to dig for our own oil because we'd be better off if we went to electric cars, etc. What is the reality on some of that?
Well, for transportation, gasoline is far more economical and efficient than ethanol and other biofuels. For power plants, as far as energy sources that are widely available, coal, the energy in coal is so concentrated, it makes coal very economic, very efficient, and thus can produce electricity at its cheapest rate. Natural gas isn't too far behind in the cost comparison. And then for places that have the capability of producing hydropower, especially from large hydropower dams, that can actually be even less expensive than coal. What's real interesting is going back a couple of decades, environmental activists rallied against hydroelectric dams, claiming that this had negative impacts on fish who had difficulty getting through the dams. And of course, responding to environmental concerns, dam operators were able to build and emplace fish ladders to allow fish to get through. But they were so concerned about hydroelectric dams, and yet they expressed no concern whatsoever about the 1.4 million birds and bats that wind turbines kill each and every year, including many endangered species. Wind turbines produce far more environmental damage than hydroelectric dams. Wind power is much more expensive than hydroelectricity. Wind power is much less reliable than hydroelectricity. And yet the environmental activists praise and love wind power and then fight against hydroelectric power. And I think that that needs to change if we're going to have an honest environmental discussion, if we really want to factor honest environmental concerns into our energy discussion.
It's interesting because here in New Hampshire we have this discussion going on about what's called Northern Pass. And the big question is the destruction of the view of our natural forests, which is one of our primary attractions.